Hello, everyone, and welcome back to another episode of the podcast. This week, I'm introducing you to Jen Johnson, and I think you'll hear, once you listen to this episode, that she and I kind of got along like a house on fire. Jen is hilarious, intelligent, empathetic, and really filled with a profound wisdom of what it looks like to work in a profession where life and death are on the line. Now, there is a trigger warning for this episode. This episode is a very, very powerful one, listeners, and it just might break your heart. When Jen shared one of her miracle stories with me, it was all I could do to keep from weeping. The story is very powerful and deals with a young mother about to give birth. There is tragedy in it, there is beauty, and I think once you hear it, you'll understand that there's also great magic in this world, great hope, great promise, great mystery. I also do need to let you know that Jen shares another story, and it's a devastating one, about what happened when a child was brought into her hospital one night. And it is difficult to hear. It might make your heart hurt a little bit. But again, it's another story of the mystery that's happening all around us at all times. Now, Jen has been an ER nurse. She's an author. She's a speaker. She's so many things. But most of all, she's hilarious. So with that in mind, let's dive on in to this week's miracle episode.
You know, we bring her in, they're starting the C-section. They're telling me, because I'm the student, they don't want me touching anything, just go sit by the head of mom's bed and we'll just wait until dad can come in. Just kind of hold the place. I'm like, okay, I can do that. So sitting there and we're just kind of talking a little bit back and forth, and she's so excited. And then I kind of hear like the alarm bells going off, and you're like, okay, that's kind of odd. I'm Jen. I'm an ER nurse. I'm a mom. I'm a wife. I'm a pagan. I'm a witch. I'm all of the fun things above. I'm an author. You know, it's one of those things where you're reading the room as to like, who are you talking to and how honest can I be? So it's, you know, hi. It's usually, hi, I'm Jen. I'm an ER nurse, and or I'll be your nurse today, kind of introduction.
I love that, because you're also introducing yourself in your, you know, respective jobs. And, yeah. You know, it might be potentially the person's very worst day, the very worst day of their life. And so I'm sure that encouraged and encourages you still to think on your toes, be absolutely compassionate for who you're talking to, and read the room. I'm sure reading the room is paramount for you.
It's the number one thing that I'm doing without realizing I'm doing it. You know, what am I walking into? Can I sense some tension? Like, is something, you know, you're like the other day I had a patient and, you know, really sick, dealing with all that. And I just happened to look at mom, and mom's got a bruise on her back and on the back of her thigh. And I'm like, that's not adding up. I'm just going to keep that. That's just some extra information that I just happen to have gathered and may have been what's contributing to the situation now. But I'm just like, oh, that's odd, but enough to like, you know, then further on, you know, we meet dad in the story. Dad's got a black eye. So it's like, okay, there's more to this story that I am not getting, but I'm aware at least that there's something that I'm missing. So reading the room, being observant, and, you know, we do a lot of eye talking as nurses, especially when family's in the room and you're just going, oh yeah, and you're doing other things, and somebody says something and you're going to your buddy like, You know, it's less now that the masks are off and we can just talk openly and kind of, you know, do a little bit more, you're working a little bit closer with people, but you know, it's the things that you're always picking up things without realizing what you're picking up, because it's just people and people are funny.
I love that. I love the way you say that. People are funny, because it's
people
true.
Are funny.
And you say it with like a wink, wink, nudge, nudge. People are funny.
Like, people are fun. People have got so much going on that I don't even, nobody knows about, right? Everybody's got a whole backstory. So, you know, I'm just walking in at this minute and trying to pick up some pieces to try and put the puzzle together as to what's going on.
And I'm curious, how did you kind of end up as an ER nurse? What was that journey?
So when I first graduated, my now husband was working in a very, very small rural town in Northern Ontario. And for every year that you did 1 year full time, you got 1 year's tuition back. So I was like, oh, well, this is a win-win. I'm already dating the guy. He's already, you know, he's got a house and he's got a job and he's doing all these things. He's already, look, his whole family's all here. So I'm like, oh, I'm just walking into this and it's already settled. So walking into the hospital, there's, you know, one hospital, and it's either, you know, one day you'll work the ER and then the next day you'll work on the floor, and you just kind of flip flop back and forth. So it wasn't even that it was something that I chose, but definitely found happy that it found me, because it suits the personality of the undiagnosed ADHD very, very well.
Oh my gosh. I think that's absolutely fascinating. But also I would imagine working in the ER requires or asks of you a lot of courage and a lot of stamina to be present in situations that are maybe chaotic. Would you say mm-hmm. that's true?
Yeah, I mean, it's not the ER. People imagine the ER is like bustling and you know, drama 24/7 and life or death emergencies every single minute, where thankfully the life and death scenarios are usually, well, on a good day, never. but on an average day, you're seeing like one or two or three people who are really, really sick. And the rest of the people are just there. You know, they're in pain. They're not sure where to go. They just need a little extra help. They're a little bit too sick for their family doctor, so they come to us. And that's what we do. But, you know, the chaos, thankfully, you get very good at being in the chaos and then sorting it very, very quickly, right? You have to kind of cut through everything, like cut through the noise and go like, okay, so what's happening? What are my immediate concerns? You know, A, B, C, D. So airway, breathing, circulation, disability, and even circulation prior to that. So if they've got any, you know, if they're bleeding out, you kind of have to deal with that first before then moving on to airway. But there's many different little acronyms that you get comfortable with, and you just kind of get in there and, you know, get a feel for it. So it's the same process over and over and over again, even though the situations are vastly different wherever you're going. So it's easier to then just kind of say, okay, well, this is what's happening. This is what I'm seeing. You know, we'll kind of very quickly go through the checklist and, oh, okay, so now we're stopping at breathing because the airway's okay. Like their throat and their esophagus or their trachea is fine. Everything's fine physically. Now we're worried about the breathing. Like, are they just having trouble breathing? Are they just short of breath? Is it fluid in the lungs? Is it pneumonia? Is it COVID? All the things, right? So you kind of just stop where you need to go. You fix that issue and then you move on. So it's just one of those things where you just get very good at A, not reacting, and then B, okay, like we're just gonna slowly go through and we're just kind of settling. And even when it is a true emergency, the chances of you being in something similar are pretty high. So, and if you're pretty good with your team, everybody knows what they're doing. Everybody knows that, okay, you've got IVs, you've got medications, you've got monitor, you've got chest compressions. In a perfect scenario, if you're doing chest compressions and trying to revive somebody, you're all talking and you're all talking about what seems to be very funny, nonsensical things. You know, you're making dinner plans, you're, you know, how was your weekend? And it seems so macabre, but if we're talking and we're relaxed, that's great. That means we know exactly what we're doing. It's when, you know, it's a kid or something that's really kind of, you know, it's not very cut and dry where everybody's quiet and we're, you know, and we're focusing very much on what's going on. That's when it's that's when to be scared, when we're not talking.
Did you want to be a nurse since you were a child?
I never once thought about being a nurse. Not once. I had a girlfriend growing up whose mom was in public health and as a nurse, and she was pretty much the only nurse that I'd ever come across. But she wasn't in hospital. She was in, you know, your Monday to Friday, 8 to 4 kind of gig. So she was always there. So I was like, oh, it just didn't really see too much of it. Wasn't until going to university for biology, failing out of organic chemistry, and thank God I did, because it allowed me to actually really stop and go, okay, is this really what I want, or does something else fit better? And had a buddy who was in nursing, and we'd go through her textbooks, and you know, they have all the grossest pictures of everything, and you're like, oh yeah, this is cool, this is what I want to see. And you're like, oh, I'm warped. Okay, good, this is before even becoming a nurse that I'm already warped. Okay, perfect, we're just gonna slot in real easy. So it was just one of those things where everything happens for a reason. Sometimes those moments that seem like your world's ending, where you're going like, oh, like I didn't get into any other universities except for Lakehead, you know, it's, you're like, oh, I guess I'm going to Lakehead. Like that wasn't my plan. That was a backup plan, but here we are. So you go up to school and you're like, okay, I'm doing the biology program. And that's like, oh, this is not fitting. Fail and it's a big knockback, and you're like, okay, now what? And it's just, if you can pivot, you can probably find where you're supposed to go. And you know, looking back, it's kind of like, well, maybe all those things happened the way they're supposed to happen, and yeah, they felt like really big kicks in the stomach at the moment, but look at me now.
I'm gonna put you on the spot, and uh-oh, if you don't want to answer these questions, no worries, but can, yeah, would you like to share like maybe a favorite memory from being on the floor and a favorite memory from being in the ER?
Yeah. So being on the floor, I was only on the floor for about 5 years with my first job. And so like kind of, I was part-time and it was half and half between that and the ER. But you know, some of my favorite memories were just learning how to nurse and figuring out that like how to talk to patients and figuring out how to talk to family and learning how to cope. Alcohol was the first go-to. but you know, through the years, it's kind of been like, okay, well, maybe that's not such a great idea. But meeting people and leaning into palliative care, especially. Palliative care has a very special place in my heart, and there's nothing more satisfying other than saving a life than helping to let one go. And so being there for somebody's final breaths or final months and actually kind of connecting with them and family and being able to care for them and explain things in terms that they can understand and being there for someone to be the one to provide the pain relief is, you know, it takes a big person to be able to say, I'm comfortable with giving these pain medications, knowing that one of the side effects is like kind of suppressing how you're breathing. Like it suppresses how well you breathe. So you breathe a little bit shallower, you know, so does it expedite things? Debatable, but that person's comfortable. And so, you know, that to me, the benefit outweighs the risk. And then I've got somebody who's not screaming out in pain and passing versus, you know, being super comfortable, surrounded by family, music playing in the background, everybody, you know, laughing about memories about this person while they're still here. So that's probably one of my more favorite moments is, you know, helping people to be comfortable in those last moments. And then the ER, oh my God, there's so many to choose from. Probably one of my most favorite moments. So I had left up north. We'd moved down south. I'd been training, but I don't think my husband had flown down just yet because he was still kind of in the mix. So I was there in the town by myself, staying at a hotel, doing my rotation, and then driving home to my parents in between. And so my preceptor was this kind of 5-foot-nothing, you know, very funny guy, and supremely well-educated, like probably one of the most educated people I know. And so we're in this very large hospital where now all of a sudden everything's happening all the time and it's great. And, you know, working a night shift, and we've got a bachelor that comes in, you know, this is the groom. He's completely obliterated. He's so drunk. He's passed out cold. Okay, fine, whatever. You're just kind of helping him up. You know, we're just waiting for him to kind of sober up, kind of thing. Okay, whatever. We get a call from the front desk saying that, hey, somebody's laying out on the pavement out front. You might want to come just check this out. So we go sauntering over, and, you know, here's this guy face down, like just hands up at like 2 a.m. And we're just like, sir, are you okay? Yeah, I'm okay. Like, okay, but do you need a hand? No, I'm fine. Can you get up? Nope, can't get up. It's like, okay. And my buddy, my preceptor pipes up, sir, do you have any weapons on you? Goes, no. Well, he was part of the bachelor party, and it was a pirate themed party. So this guy has got this massive foam sword sticking out of the back of his pants. And I'm trying not to die laughing because I think this is the funniest thing ever. And my preceptor's going like, oh, I don't know, bud. Like, if you can just sit up for us, we'd be fine. It was so good.
That's amazing.
And I was new to the area, so I didn't really realize just how, especially in the summer, like how bumping it was with tourists and all this kind of stuff. So it was coming from this, you know, very small ER where nothing even happens, and being bullied for like 5 years straight, to coming down to this exceedingly, you know, open and loving and funny, you know, just bumping environment was just, I was like, at that moment, I'm like, oh yeah, I'm in the right place.
I love that. And thank you for also touching on palliative care. I don't think, you know, people don't really think about it, mm-hmm. or they don't consider it. When you think about nurses and nursing, you know, it's something that kind of often gets left out, but it's some of the most powerful work that one can do in this world is tend to someone and be with them and be with their family in their final days or months. And some really astonishing things can happen in those spaces with the person who is passing away. But the palliative care, it is, you know, I worked for this elderly couple for 14 years in Portland, Oregon, and Sam had passed away the year before. He had been 98, and I think it was about a year and a half later in June was passing away. And I'll never forget the day that, you know, they put her into the hospital and they put her on hospice care. And I went in to talk to her and hold her hand. And then her family came in, her daughter with the daughter's two kids. And we sat in a circle to the side of June and just told stories and laughed. And June was non-responsive at this point, did not respond. But a couple times when I told some stories about stories that they had never heard before, because I really spent more time with their parents, their grandparents than they did. They were utterly flabbergasted, delighted, shocked, and we were laughing. And June started responding because I think she was hearing us laugh and share these stories. And it really made me understand that just because someone's non-responsive, it doesn't mean they can't hear what's going on around you or around them.
Absolutely.
I'm sorry.
No. So the same thing with my grandma. So she 95, 96, alive through COVID. And so we finally get to a point where she's still in hospital. She's a little bit too weak to go home and she's starting to kind of decline. And so my mom and my aunt, like they alternate every other day to drive up and see her. And so the one day I'm like, okay, I finally have enough time to go up. And so we go up and immediately I get in the bed with her because I'm like, no, you know, when was the last time anybody touched her other than to change her or to roll her? Probably not. I'm like, I'm going to cuddle up to grandma. And so, and then I grab my phone and I put on, I'm like, mom, you know, doing the math, like, how old is grandma? Like 1940s, 1950s? She's like, yeah, I think so. And so, okay, so put, find like an iTunes, like 1930s hot playlist and the top songs. And so sure enough, Frank Sinatra's, which I don't think is 1930s, but Frank Sinatra comes on My Way. And so we start playing it. And A, I'm like, oh my God, the lyrics. I'm like, and now the time is near for the final curtain kind of thing. And I'm like, oh my God, please tell me my mother isn't listening to this. I'm like, oh God. But it kind of picks up and the beat picks up. Well, grandma starts tapping her toes. And my mom goes, I would have never in a million years thought to do that. I said, well, this is just it. Everybody can, like, music reaches everybody. So to, like, figure out when somebody was roughly mid-20s, that's the era to hit and just find like any old playlist and just randomly play songs. And sure enough, you know, that's what they want to hear. That reminds them of back in the day. Same thing with me. You better believe if somebody starts playing Backstreet Boys or NSYNC, I'm going to start tapping my toes if I'm 94. 100%.
I love that. I wonder who I would start tapping my toes for. Maybe, I would say INXS or Depeche Mode.
Oh my God. I do Depeche Mode for sure. 100%.
Yeah, you know, absolutely.
I've always loved the 80s and 90s and, you know, but so I've actually got like a playlist for work and it's like ER pump up playlist. And I'm sure if you played any of those songs, 100%, I'd be like, what do I need to do? What's report? Where do I need to go?
Well, you know, the second question I ask everybody is, did you grow up in a religious household? And I am cheating a little bit because I know where you are now. So I'd love to hear how that kind of evolved over time.
Yeah. So my dad's a little bit more religious than my mom. We did go to a United Church kind of growing up, but it was always a fight to get the three of us kids up and going and, you know, church and all this. And really, church was my first bullying. Like, that was where the bullying started originally. So didn't exactly leave a great taste in my mouth. You know, going once we kind of sat for sermons and then we were sent off and it was like, you know, I just don't get it kind of thing. And so coming to the point now where it's like, okay, leaning into paganism and, you know, just spirituality as a whole and just kind of well-rounded. And it's just like, okay, well, what do I believe? Great question. I believe there's a crap ton of magic in the world that we can't harness, or we can if we try. I believe in energy. And I believe in kindness and, you know, putting things out into the universe, you know, why not? What could it hurt? You know, you want to say it's one higher power or the other or the other or the other. Sure. Whatever works for you, whatever makes you feel comfortable, you do it. I would prefer if you did not try to push it onto me. but, you know, again, I understand that there are areas in some religions where that's part of how you get around and put things out is to try and bring others in. Great. Just, I don't, if I'm saying that I'm not interested, just leave it at that. Otherwise, you know, you come to my door and have you found Jesus? And I'm like, well, you know, he and I rock out all the time at work. So yeah, I know him. He's cool, but he's not quite for me.
Well, now I want to go back to that idea of bullying in church and who was it? Was it the other kids? Was it the parents? Yeah. Was it the overall message?
No, it was just the kids, right? And again, it's just kids being kids. Did it necessarily have anything to do with church? Probably not, other than the fact that we hadn't gone there from birth to now, and we've just kind of shown up, and I'm like 8 to 10, and my siblings are younger, and all that kind of stuff. So all I could kind of glare from that interaction was just I wasn't part of the gang because I hadn't always gone there, which, funny enough, seems to always be the case with the bullying, so... It just, you know, Do I understand the need for religion? Absolutely. But everybody's got to come to their own conclusions about where they are. And it's ever evolving, right? So, you know, this year it's paganism. Maybe it will be Wiccan eventually. I don't know. You know, it's an ever evolving kind of thing. Or Druidism, like maybe we go full bore. But, you know, the peace of mind that you kind of get from, you know, maybe there is something higher out there that we can kind of lean on in times of good, bad, and otherwise. Of course that's comforting. Why wouldn't that be comforting? It's like, you know, the whole sky daddy kind of connotation, like, oh, you're praying to sky daddy, nice. Yeah, it's nice to be able to think that, you know, as adults who, you know, once you lose your parents, you don't have parents to kind of lean on for that support and that wisdom and all that kind of stuff. So yeah, it's absolutely super comforting to be able to lean on to an idea or belief about something bigger. So why not go with it?
Absolutely. And, you know, on your profile, I also noticed, just because we're talking about bullying right now, but I want to get back to your pagan kind of witchy. I have some questions, but it is interesting. I just spent a summer working at the Oregon coast, and I was definitely an interloper there. I mean, I don't live there. I came there for the summer, got a job, and there was like, I haven't worked for years in a place with mean girls energy, but there was like mean girls energy at this place. And, you know, being a little bit older than everybody else, maybe a lot older than everybody else, I just, you know, I'm done with that. You know, I don't understand it, and it's totally foreign to me, but I think people in small towns and in small places, they tend to get pretty tribal and pretty, you know, if you're someone that doesn't belong, they let you know it pretty quick.
Oh, for sure. Everybody's very, you know, closed-minded. And so that was up north, like with a town of less than 5,000 people, it was super clicky. And, you know, well, my family's been here for 50 years. Well, mine's been here for 75 and my family's been here for 100. It's like, who cares, first and foremost? But, you know, it was so small that everybody knew everybody's business. And so starting to work at the ER, people would come in and be like, oh, who are you? Who are you related to? Who are you dating? And I'm like, ma'am, this is the ER. Like, do you have an emergency that we need to deal with? Oh, no, that can wait. Yeah, so like, who are you related to? And then, oh, you know, I'd say my husband. Oh, I knew him when he was a little baby boy. And I'm like, and? Like, he's like 34 now. I'm like, what do we do? Like, he's a man now. Like, he's the EMS supervisor. Like, I don't understand how that plays into where we are right now. But again, do you have a concern that I need to be tending to? And the joke always was like, you don't bother to use your turn signals because everybody knows where you're going anyways. So that whole very, you know, tight knit people, you know, people get mad if you drove by them and you didn't wave, you know, because heaven forbid people have two of the same car in town. And I didn't realize that it was them versus some other person that I don't know. But they get mad. And then you'd hear about it on Facebook and super, super special. If I never go back, that's fine. But my mother-in-law is still up there with her friends and all that kind of stuff. So I'm like, every summer we send our kids up and my husband goes up for a week with them. And she's like, oh, aren't you coming up? And I'm like, no, never again. Thank you, though. Now I get a momcation where I get to look after nobody but myself. So I'm going to take that. Thank you, though.
Momcations, we all need them.
Momcation. Are you kidding? Oh
my God.
So hard. The only time the house actually gets cleaned for once and stays clean for half a second.
Well, I am curious, was there an inciting incident for this kind of pivot towards paganism?
I don't know if there was ever one thing. I do remember So I was working on the inpatient pediatric unit. Like I was kind of, I think I just had my second daughter or my second kid, my daughter who continues to run in and out, and working the inpatient unit was this brand new big hospital, huge. And so when you'd work the night shift, they'd turn down all the lights and you could kind of like, oh, am I seeing, like, is somebody kind of coming into my peripheral vision? I'm not sure. Just kind of brushing it off. But I ended up just having this random thought of like, oh, I'd like to try like reflexology. So looking somebody up who does reflexology, who also did Reiki. And I'm like, oh, that's, I've never had that done before. And just kind of like, ooh, curious. And so went to see her and she just happened to be intuitive as well. So talking about, you know, oh, you're an empath, and then falling down that rabbit hole of figuring out what an empath is. And you're going like, oh, that makes a lot of sense working healthcare, like picking up other people's thoughts, feelings, emotions when in crisis and even without crisis, and then kind of having to go like, okay, like, is this actually me that's thinking and feeling like this, or is this something else? So then kind of down the crystal rabbit hole we go, and with the crystals, then, you know, you can't help but find yourself on Witch Talk and all the other things on TikTok and that kind of thing. And just kind of, you know, just kind of falling into a little bit more. And then there were a couple of instances, especially on that unit, where I was having a nap one time and it was in the back of the unit. So really I shouldn't have heard anybody, really, like not a soul. And I remember, and I can't recall if I actually sat up in bed or just felt like I sat up in bed, but I thought I heard two people talking about a blood sugar and a blood sugar being like 8.6 or something. And I'm like, that's actually not too bad. And then falling back asleep. And I'm like, I can't recall if that actually happened or if I dreamt it. Like, I just don't know. So I'm like, okay, like, whatever. We'll kind of take that, you know, just as a one-off. And then happened again. So then I'm like, okay, I'm not going to sleep in that room. I'm going to go sleep in the other room. And slept in this other room and had a dream that I was exactly where I was with two little children who are roughly the same age as my kids at the time, playing on the floor. Like, oh, and again, woke up with a start. I'm like, okay, this is enough. Maybe I'm just not meant to sleep on this unit. Fine. Okay, whatever. But it's with that and with time and just slowly having it introduced where it's like, okay, you know, are things a coincidence? You know, why have I chosen, you know, 222 to follow me around everywhere, right? So it's Jen Johnson, 222 at gmail.com or at hotmail.com. You know, the two seem to follow me everywhere. So whenever I see it, it's kind of like, okay, I'm right place, right time. I understand. But then the more you kind of like are open to it, the more you kind of notice, right? The more you notice, like, this person's kind of acting this way and you're just not sure. And then being at work and having this like gut feeling where it's like, oh, I don't know if they're like really sick or just very sick, or like, do I want to run a little bit of extra blood work? You know, and going with it and just full on following the gut feeling and then being right and right again and right again and right again. And you're like, okay, is this just me? Is this just me being like a really good nurse, or is this something more? So leaning into it again and again and again, and throughout the years, just, you know, the ghost stories at work continue, honestly, all over the, every time. And then talking to other people and their ghost stories. And it's like, okay, so maybe there's more to that. So if I can believe in ghosts and I can believe in a little bit more energy, like maybe let's just kind of lean into this. And so to then get to the point of, okay, paganism and, you know, nature is a base and kind of going with that. And then to finally coming to the point of like calling myself a witch, like you want to talk about the most stigmatized word in a lot of history, you know, coming to that conclusion where it's like, no, that fits, that's me. And then saying it openly, was so empowering, like just so crazy. And with COVID, the Canadian government gave us about $5,000 for those of us who worked full time during the first 6 to 9 months of COVID. By the time we actually got it, it was like $2,500 Canadian. And so, you know, my husband and I were talking about like, oh, what would you do with this kind of thing? I'm like, you know what? I'm going to spend it on the most ridiculous thing I can think of. I'm going to go do psychic classes. So had a buddy in town who, you know, it was the broom closet that they called themselves. And so just kind of started to hang out with them. And like, I'm like, okay, like, this is really nice. And this is, you know, it was a very open space where it's like, let's talk about Wicca. Let's talk about paganism. Let's talk about all these different things and share stories and just hang out. And so I'm like, okay, feeling that, being in her house, I'm like, okay, this feels really good. And so she was offering these classes and I expected nothing out of them. And it was just so interesting to then kind of begin to tap into like the intuition side more, the medical intuitive side more, you know, all this kind of crazy extra things. And you know, you keep waiting for somebody to say like, oh no, you're just you're nuts, it's fine, like don't even worry about it. But yet things keep working out. And so, you know, delving into a little bit of spell work here and there and just kind of putting yourself out there, because like the book itself, you know, is very, it's a very woo-woo topic, intuition and nursing. But those who get it, it doesn't mean you have to be pagan or a witch or anything else like this. It's just, you know, you're having a gut feeling, you go with it. Many, if not all, women know exactly this feeling when they walk in and there's a guy across the street and you're going like, no, absolutely not. Just 100% creep factor. I'm out. And that's all it is just like, you take that, you apply it to nursing. Well, I just don't think that something's going the right way. And, you know, let's actually then bring it into, you know, what, how else can I help my patient? How better can I catch something, treat something, deal with something better? And it's a superpower, but we all have it. It's just a matter of tapping in, kind of figuring it out, and then being brave enough to vocalize it to somebody, anybody really. You're not strong enough to, or you're not ready to vocalize it and bring it to a doc because you worry about what they're going to think about you. That's okay. You'll get there. Go talk to your best work buddy or another nurse that you know, or even just somebody in healthcare, and just say like, hey, I'm having these feelings. Like, I don't know either what to do with them or how to describe them or how to get this idea across that there's something more. And truly the best part is most of these docs are already on board. They're right there with you. When a nurse says something's off, you just go with it. You know, it's the same way patients come in and they're looking at you and they're like, I'm going to die. And it's like, crap. Okay. Well, now we better get on this. Cause like they know, I don't know how they know, but every single time this has happened, they have died. Whether or not I've been able to resuscitate them and bring them back is a different story, but they knew. And it's just, it's one of these things where it's, let's just get talking about it. Let's try and take the woo, you know, the woo factor out of it and just bring it home to everybody has sensations that cause them to take a second look at a situation, whether it's healthcare or just everyday life. You understand, you know, oh, I don't have a good feeling about that person. Something's going to blow up in my face. Like their behavior is off or whatever else. You just don't have a good feeling about them. And that's perfect, because that's all it is just, it's time to trust the feeling.
Thank you for that. And I do want to go back to the ghost, because I do believe that hospitals are probably some of the most haunted places ever.
Absolutely.
Yeah, simply because of the extreme emotion and extreme intensity of the events that happen inside those walls. Yeah. And honestly, I wouldn't blame, I mean, the spirits for, you know, if they die suddenly, hanging around for a while.
Yeah, being pissed, being absolutely pissed at the situation, 100%. Totally get it. You know, so this is why I've started to walk out the souls when people die and emerge. So when somebody dies, you know, family's there. We've been cleared that they're not a coroner's case. We're okay to release a body down to the morgue. And so when everybody goes, I will go in and I'll just kind of say like, hey, look at Mrs. So-and-so. I'm so sorry, but like it was your time. If you'd like to follow me, I'll take you outside so that you're not trapped here. And I'll just walk right out the door, because again, like the ER, the door is so close to everything. And we'll just walk outside and just kind of hang outside for a minute and then go back inside. And the one time that I did this was during COVID, happened to notice that a patient who wasn't even my patient, but just happened to pop in my head on somebody. And it was very obvious that they had like 20 minutes, if that, to live. And so just kind of popped out to, you know, put on all my gown and glove and everything else, because they were a presumed COVID and family couldn't come in because there were visitor restrictions at the time. So sat with her and watched her die, which never have been able to do that before, because usually we're intervening, or family's there and we don't want to, you know, we don't want to put our two cents in kind of thing, or kind of ruin the moment. So you never really get to see that passing. And when I tell you, it's the most unsettling thing, it's absolutely so, but it was something I was like, I don't want anybody to die alone in the emerge. Like that's kind of a personal thing where I just, that's one of my loves. So yeah. So she passes, I degown, I deglove. I was going to go into the back to cry. And I'm like, oh my God, I didn't walk out the soul. I'm like, okay. So I like go back up to the front and I open the door. I said, okay, Mrs. So-and-so, I'm so, so sorry, but it was your time. You know, we've talked to your daughters. They know, you know, they want you to know that they loved you and all this kind of stuff. And we're so sorry that they couldn't come in. It's just one of those things. And so I'm like tearing and I'm just like all over the, I'm a mess. And so I go to walk out the door. And it's this gloomy day, and there in the middle of everything is the most beautiful rainbow I think I've ever seen in my entire life. And I'm just like, oh my God. And so I run back inside because I know that we're all just grasping at straws to try and feel or see a little bit of like happiness. So I'm like, oh my God, the most beautiful rainbows outside. Everybody come outside. Everybody rushes outside and it's gone. And I'm like, okay. So everybody goes back inside and I'm like looking at the sky and I'm like, all right, that was for me. I understand. I get it. And I appreciate it. I'm like, and now I'm going to bawl again. Like, so, you know, it's become a routine. I've taught it to others. We're starting to teach it kind of off the cuff to nursing students and new hires, but you know, you can't work in this line of work without kind of realizing that there's got to be more to this, because, you know, the coincidences, the randomness of the whole thing, you know, it makes it a little bit easier to, when, you know, you can kind of rely on the fact that maybe there's more up there and maybe there's a little bit more going on and a little bit more magic.
Yeah, and I bet you've witnessed a bunch of that in palliative care. And so this is a really beautiful segue into, and it doesn't just have to be palliative care, but the main question of the podcast, which is, I would love to hear a story or even multiple stories where you feel like you've witnessed something magical or miraculous or even mysterious. I'd love to hear whatever you feel like sharing.
Yeah. So one of the first times to like full on witness miracle, was I was a nursing student and was working or had my placement in labor and delivery. And so I'm like, oh, this is so cool. Birth, you know, oh, everything's happy, happy, happy. And so we get ready. We've got this routine scheduled C-section. This is mom's second C-section. The first one was almost a year to the day prior. We're like, oh, that's so cute. This is great. She's like, oh, you know, I do pass out when you start out, when you start the IV, just as a heads up. So we're like, okay. And sure enough, start the IV, she passes out, she comes back, it's all fine. And so, you know, we bring her in, they're starting the C-section. They're telling me, because I'm the student, they don't want me touching anything, just go sit by mom's, the head of mom's bed, and we'll just wait until dad can come in. Just kind of hold the place. I'm like, okay, I can do that. So sitting there and we're just kind of talking a little bit back and forth and she's so excited. And then I kind of hear like the alarm bells going off and you're like, okay, that's kind of odd. And, you know, then the anesthetist is kind of yelling things overhead and like down towards where everybody else is performing the C-section. And like, And I'm like, oh, that's kind of like, he's saying things that I'm not catching because I'm not done nursing school. And it still would have taken a couple of years to figure out what exactly he was saying. So I'm like, oh, but he's got some urgency in his voice. I'm like, oh, that's what's going on. And my patient starts talking about seeing God. And, you know, I see a cabin and the cabin's in the woods and it's so beautiful. And, you know, I see God and he's waiting for me and, you know, all these things. And I'm like, pardon me? I don't think so. And so I'm like, everything's going to be fine. And so of course, as a nursing student, you have no idea what to do. You're like, everything's going to be fine. It's just going to work out. It's all going to be fine. It's going to be fine. And so sure enough, you know, they're then kind of rushing a bit and I can feel them kind of rush. They take baby out and mom kind of like leans back a bit and she's saying the baby's name. And it's like, okay, you know, then we hear baby cry and I'm like, okay, like baby's crying. Fantastic. Well, then mom goes limp and, you know, they go, oh my God, call code blue. And so my preceptor starts chest compressions. She tells me to run over to the phone and call out a code blue and all this. And I'm like, what is happening? Like, I just told her she was fine. Like, what is happening? And so, you know, they work it for a bit and they get her back. But at this point now she's intubated. So she's got a tube down her throat and she can't talk because they've sedated and paralyzed her. We transfer her to a cardiac hospital not too far down the road. And, you know, this is 8:39 a.m. And so we go back. And so we're like, okay, so like, all right, kind of debrief a little bit and then go back to work. And at around 1-ish, 1-2 o'clock in the afternoon, they kind of call everybody in and they're like, she's died. Like, yeah, you know, we're really sorry. You know, if anybody needs any help, like, let us know. But, you know, she's passed. And I'm like, no. I told her she'd be okay. I told her she would be okay. And so they're like, oh, do you want to go home? I'm like, yes, I want to go home. They let me drive. They shouldn't have let me drive home. Drove home. You know, was staying with my parents at the time. So into my childhood home, crumpled up on the floor. My little sister comes down the stairs to be like, what is going on? Kind of fill her in a little bit. And she's like, holy crap. I'm like, yeah. So I go, I'm like, you know what? I'm wiped. I'm going to go to bed. Like I can't right now. And so try to go to bed and just keep waking up time and time and time again, because I'm like, those were her last words. The words that I heard, nobody will hear them because she said them to me and everybody else was very, very busy trying to save her life. So I'm like, if I don't, like, I have to write them down now, because if I don't write them down now, I'm going to lose them or they're going to change or something. So ended up getting pieces of paper and just writing everything, especially, you know, the God part and the cabin and all this kind of stuff. And in the morning had to go back. So went in, made sure to stop to get a card for dad, one card for dad, one card for baby, and bought baby a little necklace and it had a little circle and it said hope. And I bought the same necklace for myself. And so went up there and told my preceptor, I'm like, hey, like I'm not doing very well, but like, I've got to give this to the family. Like I can't not give this to the family because I was the one to hear all of her last words. And so my preceptor's like, yeah, baby's in the NICU. I'm like, oh, why is the baby in the NICU? They're like, she actually had to be resuscitated at the same time. And I'm like, I did not even know that. Like, oh my God. But I'm like, okay, but baby's fine, right? She's like, yeah, baby's fine. But you know, just so you know. And I'm like, oh my God. So go into NICU, end up seeing babe, who's beautiful, talking to parents or talking to dad. And I can't remember if it was his parents or her parents that were also there, and just like bawling with them to be like, I am so sorry that you weren't allowed in. But like, here is everything she said. And as best I can remember, and I'm so sorry that it's taken me a day to get back to you. But I just don't want her words to be lost. And especially because I kind of knew, or I kind of had the sensation that they were a fairly religious family. So giving them these cards and just going like, you know, do with it what you will, you know, open them, don't open them, that's fine. But like, I just, me personally needed to give you these cards and you needed to hear her words. So, you know, hugs and crying and all the things and finishing the placement and, you know, going on with life. But this is just when Facebook kind of started. And so as a nursing student, I don't know how I got his information, like dad's information, but we ended up becoming Facebook friends. And so I've gotten to watch the girls grow. I've gotten to watch the girls grow up. I've been able to have a lot more closure than anybody else ever gets. And, you know, dad got remarried and it seems like they're happy. And writing the book and putting that story in there, I'm like, I can't not have their approval. So I sent the book, I sent everything to them. I said, look, this is her chapter. I said, but I want you to have the whole book because I want you to know where I'm coming from and what the book's kind of about. I said, and if you say that you don't want it in there, it is gone. It is out in a heartbeat, not a problem. And he goes, this is so beautiful. And there are things in there that I didn't know. And I'm like, oh my God, how are, like, what, 17 years later, there's things in there that you didn't know. And like, it's kind of lovely to be able to, again, give that closure back while still understanding that it's horribly tragic. And, you know, there's still going to be pain after all these years. And I really hope I'm not stepping on any toes on the new wife, who also seems to be super lovely. But it was just one of those stories where it was like, okay, that's like, how can you not call that magic?
I am over here almost crying or weeping.
Oh, sorry.
No, that story is so profound and so gorgeous and tragic. And I think about you in this position, you're a student. You don't even know what they're saying over you in this, when this all starts to kind of go wrong. You don't even know, but you are there. You're there and you're present for her. Yeah. And I'm going to presume she was somewhat young.
Yeah.
And so there was no reason for her to go into that procedure that day thinking that this was the day she was going to die.
Yeah. None whatsoever.
And you know, what a
responsibility. She'd had a C-section before. Like, she'd had a C-section before. Everything was fine. Like, this was just a repeat. It was just another day.
And here you are at this moment where she's given a glimpse of what's waiting on the other side.
Yeah.
And they often talk about in these stories that the soul that goes to these places, they're given a choice of whether to stay or come back. And I wonder if, because it was so beautiful and unreal and that connection to God was so profound, that she chose to stay that day. I don't know. I don't want to belittle it, but what a position for you to be put in. I can't even imagine. And what I think is especially beautiful about your story is that you showed up for the family and you gave them this gift, this profound gift, telling them what she experienced in those last moments, which I am sure in the days and weeks and years that followed gave them incredible comfort.
I'm hoping. I'm really hoping. I've never met the girls other than meeting the youngest that one day, but, you know, went to the funeral with my preceptor and have still got her. So put an allergy band on her that day, right? Because she had allergies, and I cut off the end of the band because it flaps all around and it gets to be a pain, and I've still got it. It's still kicking around. So it's like, sometimes I wonder, like, am I purposefully holding on to it? Is it, you know, do I feel bad for potentially letting it go? Because, you know, it was so significant. It was my first code blue. Like, it was so many things. But, you know, it's I find it every now and again. Sometimes I forget where I've put it, but I find it again. It's like, okay, like, I understand. I get it, you know. Or, you know, you'll come across a dime somewhere or in a scenario that's horrific. And you're like, all right, I know. But it's one of those lightning moments where you're like, that was the nurse that I was before working, before burnout, before having all these ridiculous expectations placed on us by our day-to-day jobs. You know, I can be that person. So it's comforting that way. Sometimes it's a little bit defeatist because I'm like, oh, that's who I was. Like, oh my God, like, can I get there again? And the other half of me is like, well, we're going to just put up a little bit of a wall because that was so hard. And obviously 17 years later, it's like it happened yesterday. So, you know, it's like, okay, like, let's just chill out. And anybody who actually does get me crying at work, there's very good reason for it. You've broken through the wall. You've reached the caring intuitive nurse center. And I don't know what I'll even say sometimes. Sometimes things just kind of come out or questions come through and it's just like, I didn't mean for the conversation to go that way, but now I've got so much more information that I wouldn't have necessarily gotten any other way. So it's crazy. It's crazy and it's wonderful and it's magical and it's chaos personified, but I don't ever see leaving the bedside. I mean, I don't know if I can do it full time ever again, but I can't ever see leaving bedside. It's too close to the magic that you can't, you know, how better to get a real life perspective on the status of people other than work in the ER and seeing everybody at their worst.
And I think about you as that young student and having such a great responsibility placed on you. And I think that you consciously acted with a lot of empathy, a lot of compassion, and really consciously, you know, which is just, you know, not everyone can do that. Not everyone can do it. And so it was almost like you were placed there so that this really horrific and horrible thing that was going to happen, so that you could be present for the family and let them know about her last visions.
Because that placement wasn't even supposed to be like a hospital placement. That was supposed to be a community placement, but it somehow got mixed up. And so in talking, like after I'd started, they're all like, oh, my community placements, you know, everybody else is complaining about their community placements because it's obviously not where they want to go. And I'm going like, oh, I'm at a hospital. They're like, how are you at a hospital? This is supposed to be a community placement. I'm like, so I freaked and I got back to my clinical director to be like, hey, like, this is where I'm actually at. Like, am I not supposed to be here? And they're like, well, no, but you know, I guess if you go down to the breastfeeding clinic for a couple of shifts, we can kind of count that as community service. I'm like, okay. I'm like, because I don't want to do community. So I'm like, this is fine. This is, I will go down. I will hang out with the breastfeeding babes. We'll figure that out. But yeah, I didn't even realize. I forgot about that. It was a mistake.
But was it?
Because sometimes, again, people will come into my care where you're going, you know, you do the day, you go through everything and you get in your car, you close the door, you're in the hospital parking lot, you're like, I was supposed to be here for that one. And you're like, all right, I see you. And, you know, randomly talking up to the sky or the heavens or whatever. And you're like, all right, I see you. I get it. Okay. All right. Like, fine.
I love that you and I are kind of alike, because sometimes I react that way. I'm like, fine, whatever.
Fine,
whatever. So begrudgingly, I'm like, whatever.
Oh, it's just like, oh God, fine. Or it's, you know, life hands you a lemon. You're like, I know I'm supposed to make lemonade out of this, but I'm really not in the mood.
Right. I usually say, but y'all can suck it.
Right. I absolutely love it. Every day is so funny, and like things happen, or like I used to say that, so my second job was like maybe 7 minutes from my house to the hospital, and you know, just chock full of streetlights. And so, you know, I knew it was a really bad day, or I didn't need to be there when it was like stoplight after stoplight after stoplight after stoplight, and like 25 stoplights to try and get to the place. You're like, what in the world's happening? Versus, you know, green lights all the way through, and you're like, oh no, I'm supposed to be there. What's gonna happen now?
That's actually fascinating. I kind of love that, because you're paying attention to the signs in the universe. And I think that's really important. I mean, just in general in life for all of us, because once you kind of sign that contract, I guess you could say that you're willing to co-create with the universe, all of a sudden the signs start happening for you. So thank you for sharing that story. Oh my goodness. I had goosebumps. I was... Mm-hmm. So filled with grief, but also grateful that you told it. Yeah, so thank you.
No problem.
I got a little truth
bombs going on.
Yeah. Yeah. Do you have any other stories you'd like to share?
Oh my God. How much time do you have?
Well, I would love to ask you, I mean, I don't know if you have any specific stories you want to share, but I would love, as just a little side note here, to ask you about any kind of miraculous or magical things you've witnessed around in your palliative care.
Yeah. So me specifically, other than the woman who died during COVID and my grandma, you know, working the ER, you can kind of be a part of palliative care, but not really. And I don't think I was just paying enough attention when I first started. Shockingly enough, even though I actually got a palliative care certificate before getting my nursing degree, which is hilarious. It's just something, again, I fell into, and it was just four courses and, you know, fantastic certificate, highly recommend. You don't even need to be nursing. It was social work. It was OTPT. It was anybody who's got, you know, dealing with people. It was great. And, you know, the only other one that I can kind of think of, so what was that? Fourth job in the pediatric eMERGE. And, you know, it's a midnight. Everything's going pretty good. It's a half decent night. And we get this call that unfortunately there's vital signs absent. So a pediatric cardiac arrest that's coming in. And so we're like, okay. And so, you know, the eMERGE is at that place is very, very young. A lot of people, once they have kids, they can't work that eMERGE anymore just for, you know, that headspace. So they leave. So it's typically very, very young. And this had happened to me after I'd already had one pediatric code. I was like, I'm good. And so, you know, they're asking, I'm like, okay, who wants to be in on this? And everyone's like, oh my God, me. And I'm like, yeah, no, I've had enough. I will sit back and I will watch the whole rest of the floor. Don't even worry about it. So the patient comes in, I don't even know if they were 18 months, but, you know, didn't ever actually hear the story, but they tried to resuscitate. And unfortunately, odds were against the kids. So they did pass. And so, you know, we go through all the things and everybody kind of comes back and you can feel the tension in the air that, you know, it's just a very, you know, you're not going to be joking around for the rest of the shift because the shift is done. You know, you're just kind of killing time until the next set arrives. And so, you know, we're kind of going on with our day. And so somebody, I guess, brings up the trauma stretcher or the morgue stretcher, and they're going to take the kid and take them from the trauma stretcher, put them onto the morgue stretcher. And I guess when this happened, all of the lights in the department shut off. all of the power went out. It took a good minute to 2 minutes for the backup generator to kick in, which is a long time when you're sitting in the dark in an emergency department. So you're like, okay. And then the backup generators kick in and, you know, the lights come on at like half power, all of the extraneous noise from like the ice machine and all that kind of stuff is all gone because they're not plugged into the right outlets. So it's like quiet, and we don't use that word ever. It's got negative connotations, so we don't say the Q word. But it was just this eerie silence, dim, and you're just like, this is insane. Yeah, I'm out. And so, you know, they take the lights finally come on enough that they can take the kid down. Time goes by, you know, the rest of the shift. I think it's maybe a few hours later, and the same crew, the same EMS crew that had brought in the child, comes back and asks the charge nurse how things went. And she said that the kid had died. Well, I guess all the power goes off all over again. And you're like, what? Like, what is happening? And so all I could think at that time, because I was already like 1 foot into the spiritual, so I was like, oh man, somebody is pissed. I'm like, okay. And again, same thing. It takes a little bit of time for the power to come up, but it's still dark outside. So like, it's still like pitch black in the unit. And it's not like there was a thunderstorm outside. It's not like there was any other reason for this to happen. I don't even know if the power went out in the rest of the hospital or not, but I was like, okay, I see you. Like, yeah, that was, you know, you want to talk about how can you not put two and two together after that, is beyond me.
Wow. That is astonishing. And also very sad. And I think a lot of people, they don't think about hospitals as kind of taking care of kids. They always think of them as taking care of maybe a teenager gets in a car crash, or an adult slips and falls on the stairs or something like that, or there's violent crime and the ER is there to help take care of them, but they don't think of children. And my God, do I understand why you wouldn't want to be there for that whole resuscitation and trying to be of aid to this child that was really at death's door. But that story of just the lights turning off, and both at these moments when the child is being moved from, and then when the EMS team comes in and says, those are both like these horrific points in time where the reality of this child no longer being here is kind of, it's there, that it's over. That's actually a very spooky tale.
It certainly left an interesting taste in my mouth. And, you know, we joke about, you know, that hospital being particularly haunted because it is a children's hospital, right? So you've got these very young child spirits kicking around, and, you know, they just want to goof around and be funny and silly and play with you, right? They just want to play. So, you know, there's one elevator in that building that is closest to the ER that is always under construction. They're always trying to fix this thing. And when it is finally working, you know, you'll get in on the ground, like on the parking garage, and then you'll kind of come up and, you know, then you'll go up to the third floor or you go up to the fourth floor, and you're like, I pressed two, like, what is happening? And so, you know, the doors will open and close. You're like, nothing's happening. Doors will close. You'll go back down to the parking garage again. You're like, no. Like, this, I need to go to the second floor. So, you know, and it got to a point of it happening so frequently that I'm like, okay, guys, I understand. We all want to goof around. We all want to play, but like, I do need to get to work. Could I please go to work? Sure enough, up to the second floor, no problem. I'm like, thank you. Like, out.
Oh my gosh, you have such a wonderful attitude towards it. I think I might have been like hyperventilating and freaking out and being like, oh my God, oh my God, oh my God.
Yeah.
What do I get off this? Like, you could do a whole horror movie about like being locked in this elevator and you're like, what? is happening? Why can't I leave the elevator?
Well, and it's, and it had like all, like it was all mirror, like on the top half, it was all mirror. So I'm just like, so then I'm just looking at myself being like, this isn't funny. Like, can you just like go down to the second floor, please? I need to get to work. I'm almost late for work. I don't want to be late. Can we please? And then sure enough, come right down.
I would imagine you never had, I'm sure you've seen The Shining.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah.
You did never had a ball kind of come out of nowhere in the darkness and land before your feet.
Would die. Would. That's an absolute nope. Out. Gone. You know, it was hard enough trying to find places to lay down to have a nap and sleep during night shift. And so routinely, when I would go to new units or whatever, or help to cover, it's like, okay, where do I go to pee? Where can I put down my bag? Where do I leave my lunch? And where's haunted? Where I need to know what's haunted. Cause like, ask any nurse who's been working more than like 2-3 years in a hospital setting, more often than not, ask them about their ghost stories. I guarantee you that there's 1 or 2 or 10, depending on the age of the building. Like, it's, we kind of joke because our current hospital, the new hospital, is being built right behind it. So we can kind of watch it going up. So it's super cool. But I keep joking around with everybody. I'm like, so where are the ghosts going to go? So this is going to be a parking lot because they're going to demolish the old one and make it a parking lot. So I'm like, do you think they're going to just like travel over, or is it just going to be a super haunted parking lot? Like, what's the theory about what's going to happen here?
I think that's a really good question.
Right? Like, or are we starting from a fresh slate and it's going to take a while for us to figure out, you know, haunted, not haunted, you know, kind of thing. But it's the same thing, you know, the recess room, me personally, you don't touch the trauma stretchers. You're just inviting shit to happen. You do not, you know, watch your cardiac leads, because every now and again you will have, so cardiac leads is 5 leads that we stick, you know, 2, 1, and 2 on the bottom, and you need all 5 attached. Well, for the most part, you need all 5 attached to actually read like a rhythm. And the number of times at multiple different hospitals that the cardiac monitor has not only turned on, but then read a perfect sinus rhythm is innumerable. And you go in and you look and you're like, nobody's here. All the leads are just sitting there. They've, you know, they're just hanging. They're not attached to anything. It's not like they're touching metal or, you know, some way where they can conduct. Like, no. They're just hanging. Like, nope. I'm like, so I've got a sage spray that I bring to work. Cause of course you can't like burn sage or, you know, anything else or incense or anything like that. So I'm like, sage spray. Or like a sage spritz. I've got some Florida water from Salem that were just like, sage spritz. Yep. Nope.
Oh my God. I love your attitude about this. This is really remarkable and kind of wonderful. And you're so pragmatic about it too. You're not threatened. You're not scared. You're just like, it is what it is. And I just got to take care of business.
And to be fair, this is me removed from the situation. You better believe that I'm just like, not doing well when like things are actually happening. You're like, okay, we're just gonna close the curtains. Like, we're just gonna, nope. I will reflect on this later, but I'm not dealing now. Thank you very much.
Alright, dear listeners, with that, it's a wrap on this episode of the podcast. I need to thank Jen for sharing all of her stories, all of which were incredibly potent and incredibly profound. I need to thank her for being vulnerable, for bringing her sense of humor, her sense of grace to this episode in this interview, and just in general, for being an all-around incredible human being. To check out a little bit more about what Jen is doing in this world and how Jen is making this place more beautiful, please do click on the episode's show notes.
And don't forget, ratings and reviews are so very important. So if you find it in your heart and in your mind to give me a rating or write a little review, I would be ever so grateful. Thank you for listening. And here's my one request. Be like Jen. Approach the world with grace. Approach the world with a sense of humor. Jen has worked in areas where loss is rampant, heartbreak is real, but she's able to see the beauty and recognize the gorgeousness that comes out of some of these events. I'm not saying that all of them are beautiful. I'm just saying that in this very challenging profession that Jen has, she's able to glimpse those moments of grace, those glimmers of hope, those shiny, beautiful places where the mystery is. And she uses all of those glimpses, all of those glimmers, when she walks out into the world to make it a better place for everyone else. And I think we need to grab that magic where we can, because it's going to be in different places for each of us. And frankly, that's going to be one of the things I use to get through the next 4 years. I'm going to find the beauty where I can, the hope where I can, the grace in the most unlikeliest of places. And I think recognizing those moments of grace for me, well, it's going to remind me that this is just a moment in time and that I have more than a capacity to deal with it, engage with it, and hope for something better. So be like Jen, bring your grace to the world, bring your sense of humor to the world. And I think if a lot of us start doing that, if a lot of us start engaging in this way, well, they're not going to be able to stop us bringing even more beauty, even more equality, and even more justice to this world. See you next week for the very next episode. I have some incredibly fun guests coming, and I can't wait to introduce you to all of them. So with that, I hope the rest of your week is filled with grace, with beauty, and glimmers, beautiful glimmers of hope. Oh my gosh. You are an incredible storyteller, by the way. I don't know if anyone has told you that. Oh my goodness.
I it's one of those things where nurses, we talk through stories, right? Mm-hmm. Like a lot of our learning, especially after graduating, is all through stories. And like, oh, you know, this is why you've got a story about why you're scared to death of pancreatitis or ectopic pregnancies, or, you know, if you ever come across somebody and they've got this weird hang up about a random thing that you're like, that's nothing. You're like, no, they have got a story about said thing that has happened to them, and this is why they're, you know, extra careful or like iffy about it.
Yeah.
So when somebody comes up to you and you're talking to your nurses and you're just like, oh, I've just got this guy, da da da, and here are his vitals, and you're like, I don't know, that sounds like a cold sepsis to me. And they're like, what? What's a cold sepsis? And you're like, well, you know, a degree under 36.5 degrees Celsius, below heart rate high, blood pressure low, sats low, like oxygen saturation's low. Like you can actually have a cold sepsis, not just like a fever sepsis.
Yeah.
So they're like, oh, and I'm like, yeah, because guess who got caught with their pants down because I didn't put enough effort and didn't catch it soon enough. So guess what? Now I've got a story about it. Now I've got a story about pancreatitis and why I am deathly afraid of it. You know, we all have stories, and taking that 2 minute like little blurby and then kind of stretching it out to an actual like engaging story has actually been incredibly cathartic. Hard as hell. Telling my laboring mom's story, you know, that took 4, 5, 6 revisits to it, because, you know, you kind of write out the bare bones, you sit, you cry, you lose it, you give it a week, you go back, you kind of stretch it out a bit. You're like, okay, I'm back in that headspace. You got to get out, cry, lose it, you know, and just slowly going back and forth and back and forth so that you can actually kind of tease out, you know, where was I? Like, you know, actually put myself back in that scenario and go like, okay, well, I was on her left. Mm-hmm. And like the anesthetist was on the right and he was ahead of me and it was a guy, and the baby or mom didn't code until they put on the bandage. Mm-hmm. Like, and then you start to realize more of what's gone on because you are actually finally allowing yourself to go back into it.
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Oh yeah. Absolutely. Thank you so much. I'm excited, and congratulations on the book, by the way.
Thank you.
Really, congratulations. So
there it is. My baby.
Oh, I know.